You are listening to Business Day Spotlight.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. This is your weekly business podcast. This is the Business Day Spotlight, and we are going to be talking about elections today. It is the 10th of April 2019, which means we are drawing ever closer to those very important elections that are coming up next month. So today we just decided that we're going to look at what some of the data in South Africa has to say about elections and what some of the implications could be of some of the data that's being collected by scientists out there, and what type of insights we might actually draw as to how the election will actually result in May. I'm joined in studio by Genevieve Quintal, who is the politics editor for the Business Day, in studio with us. How are you, Genevieve?
I'm good, and you?
I'm fine, thank you. For us to begin, the Business Day actually had an event yesterday. It was a Business Live Insight having an event called Election Directions. And I understand that they were using data points just as a way to perhaps draw some insights around what the election outcomes might be, or how the parties might fare. Could you just give our listeners just a little bit of insight as to how that event went, and what the actual purpose was of going through some of this? Because I don't think people pay attention a lot to the data, you know, mainly the rhetoric most of the time.
I think people sometimes are a bit scared of numbers.
Yeah.
I know I am. I'm a political journalist.
Yeah.
Sorry, we had Paul Berkowitz give a presentation.
Yeah.
So we invited, obviously, people to come in and listen. He broke down statistics for these elections, how many people are registered, how many people are male or female, and compared this, our numbers from this year to 2014,
yeah,
showing how voter registration has actually gone down a bit,
yeah,
showing, comparing how many people register to vote and how many people vote, and then also just looking at polling numbers in, yeah, terms of the political parties, where they could possibly be standing in terms of their numbers on election day.
Yeah.
I think what all pollsters make clear, and Paul said the same thing, is this is not a prediction. It is basically a snapshot in time. The outcome could be different, but it's more or less, you know, and it's a scientific thing. It's not just sitting going, oh, well, I think the ANC will do this, and it is basically based on a scientific model of numbers,
yeah,
and calculations. So yeah, so he gave a breakdown of that, what the provinces look like, yeah, what to look out for, and then following that we had a panel discussion,
yeah,
with myself and some other colleagues from Tisa Blackstar. We had Ranjini Munsami, Kanita Hunter, and Sikonati from the Financial Mail. And yeah, so then we just gave our views as the writers from a more political point of view and what we're seeing on the ground, mm-hmm, and from speaking to people to sort of help put those numbers into sort of context, yeah, of what's happening, because numbers don't always tell you the whole story.
Yeah. Okay, so we actually have a little bit of a clip just from that presentation and some of the insights that were actually given. So we're just going to play that for you, and then we'll be back to discuss what actually happened yesterday.
The two factors which are going to influence the outcome overall are the turnout of ANC voters and young voters, meaning very broadly 20 and 30 somethings. And I think what's important here is that a lot of people, political parties especially, try and tell the story from the end all the way back to the beginning and try and look at percentages of a total vote without taking into account that ANC voters have historically, and the ANC's share of the vote has been the numeraire, the determining factor, the starting point, the alpha, and sometimes the omega. The DA didn't, put it another way, the DA didn't win 2016 as much as the ANC lost it. Okay. As we know, low ANC turnout 2016 was devastating in Nelson Mandela Bay, in Gauteng metros, and there are over a third of the current registered voters are under the age of 35. Of course, that's exciting because everyone is wondering how many the EFF will capture. And if we enter load shedding in the 2 or 3 weeks heading up to elections, it may hurt the ANC a lot more than our model shows at the moment. We recognize people are complex, outcomes are random, there's a fair amount of uncertainty. We take the polls as a starting point. We take them as reference points. But we have to introduce some randomness into the model.
So that was just a bit of insight. I understand that that's Paul, just giving some insights as to some of the data. An interesting line that he said is that the DA did not win the election as much as the ANC lost it, which is, it sounds very bizarre the way that he says it, but when you actually think about it, you know, it actually makes sense. And he begins by talking about how the two things that are gonna determine the election is how many ANC voters actually come out and the youth, you know, at the moment. So Genevieve, just from, you know, your experience, what do you take of this from what you were saying? And the other thing, this is just a question, perhaps he highlighted this from last from the presentation yesterday. Why is the data so old?
So firstly, I want to say he's quite correct in that the DA didn't so much win as the ANC lost. If you look at 2016, the DA didn't outright win. It didn't get more than 50% in Johannesburg or Tswane. It got below 50%, but so did the ANC.
Yeah.
But they were lucky enough that the EFF had a long list of conditions for the ANC when they were talking of possible coalitions, or the EFF doesn't go into a coalition, it's more a cooperation agreement. They don't want to be beholden. And the ANC wasn't prepared to do a lot of things on that list. It was things such as removing President Jacob Zuma, doing away with the nuclear deal. There was a whole range of issues. And so the EFF gave its vote to the DA, and that's how the DA managed to take hold of those provinces. Mm. So voter turnout, that's what it comes out. And the voter turnout of the ANC, the DA is historically really good at bringing out their voters, really good at mobilizing and making sure their voters come out. And I think the ANC was a bit complacent in 2016, almost this thing of, and I think they underestimated voters. And that was something that was spoken about yesterday, that they thought, ugh, people always vote for the ANC, they'll come out and vote for the ANC. And then the people that historically voted for the ANC decided, I'm not going to vote. Almost, you know, they were trying to tell us in Kandla, it doesn't matter, it's a clever blacks white man issue. Our people don't care about that, and it hurt them. So I think they've learned a lesson. I hope they've learned a lesson from that, because that's also going to be another determination for this election. Are people going to come out? You were asking about the youth.
Yeah, I was asking about the youth, but more around why is the data so old?
2014 was our last national election.
Ah.
A national election and a local government election are quite different.
Okay.
And you can't really compare the numbers because a local government election, you're voting for, that's more voting for an individual.
Yeah.
Because you're, especially in your ward,
you're
voting for someone who you believe can be a good councillor.
Yeah.
But a national election, national provincial is different. So the reason why it's the 2014 is comparing it to the last national election.
Okay, that's fine. Because I was thinking about 2014 in relation to 2016. I'll say, why don't we have data? Okay, now that you've explained it from that end, I guess it makes sense. So from your point of view, given the apathy issue you've just spoken about, is there likely to be more apathy towards the national election, as you alluded to just now, or a local election? Because at least with a local election, you can't know the person that you are voting for. So wouldn't it be fair to say that you're more likely to care about a local election than a national election?
I actually don't think so. If I remember correctly, I think that the turnout actually is higher for a national election than it is for a local government election. It's definitely more important. It's the direction of the country. It's national leadership. So people are more likely to come out for a national election.
Yeah.
Look, our voter turnout has been decreasing over the last three elections. And from what I understand from the way it's decreased, so it was 73% voter turnout in 2014. In 2009, it was a bit higher than the 23%. I can't remember the exact number. So now they pollsters are kind of putting the turnout at this election at about 71%. Mm. And that's almost in line with history of the small percentage that voter turnout keeps dropping.
Yeah.
What made it difficult this year and why our actual registration, the IEC had one registration weekend.
Yeah.
This year. Mm. And that's because it had to deal with the Constitutional Court order of fixing the voters' roll and getting addresses. And because of that, I think some people had to be taken off the voters' roll because they couldn't verify their address and issues like that. And because it was only one voter registration weekend.
It's a bit tough.
Yes.
Okay. So one of the things that actually we have another clip which I think will help us sort of get into the next part of the conversation is just the issue around load shedding. You heard Paul mentioning the fact that one of the things that affected people was the issue of load shedding. So we're just gonna hear just a little bit about that. And the interesting bit for me was just around Eskom and its particular effects on rural voters. So let's hear that.
Sikonathi, you've been dealing a lot with the Eskom crisis, and it is, I think, a defining crisis of this era. This issue of load shedding in the past few weeks, how much do you think all of these issues around Eskom, the electricity crisis, have impact on the public psyche?
Anjani, that's a very simple yet very complicated question. The biggest majority of people in this country have had load shedding forever. Mm-hmm. My home on the Wild Coast in the Transkei only got connected to the grid on the 9th of August 2018.
That's my birthday.
2018?
Yes, last year. Now, you can't tell me about load shedding. If I'm there, if I've had electricity all my life in Sandton, then load shedding is a very big matter. And by the way, the past 2 weeks that you guys were subjected to load shedding here, I was in the Eastern Cape, there was absolutely no load shedding. And that's where the majority of votes come from for the African National Congress. It's lost Gauteng, it's lost the big cities, but it's got the rural areas.
I think the reason why I was very interested in that particular portion is just this issue of the apathy that you were talking about, the ANC getting its voters out. And I think, sometimes we get into a bit of an echo chamber. You think that just because there's load shedding and Eskom is doing this, that people are unlikely to vote for the ANC, and you think that it's issues that are affecting everyone. But then you then find out that, no, there's an entire constituency of people that are either unaffected by load shedding, or their lives are such that load shedding is not a factor, because like what Sikonathi said, there hadn't been electricity in the area, so you can't miss what you don't already have, like in some of those things. So do you think that the ANC is catering, I guess, to that demographic, or are they just hoping that the issues in urban areas are not going to affect them and that they don't have to do much there?
Well, no, I think they definitely feel the issues in urban areas are affecting them. And if you look the last few days, since last week Thursday, the president, Cyril Ramaphosa, has been on the campaign trail. He met with, at the time they sent out an advisory saying white counterparts in Sandton, and then it became white compatriots, and then it became national groups.
Yeah.
And then he
the wording.
And then he met farmers yesterday in the Western Cape. And they very much, and I think the Sunday Times had a story about the white vote or the minority vote.
Mm.
They definitely have got their eye on the minority vote. And if they've got their eye on the minority vote, they can't ignore issues such as load shedding. But then you also campaign very differently depending on which area you go to. So on that Thursday that he went to Sandton, in the morning he went to Deep Slurt, Eldorado Park. The big issue in Deep Slurt was housing.
Yeah.
But also like we said, like I said earlier, we mustn't underestimate the voter, because when he started talking to them about housing, oh, we're going to build houses here in Deep Slurt, people started shouting, corruption, corruption, corruption. And remember what I said of 2016, they thought the issues of corruption in terms of Nkandla and things like that were not going to affect them. Hmm. Because, and they had the sense that people would still come, especially your more rural voters would come out and vote. But it is an issue. And actually on Monday, Fikile Mbalula, who's the head of elections, said this campaign has not gone as easily as we would have hoped for it to come. Mm. And he said the ANC did its own internal survey. And people are saying to them, he puts it this way, people still trust, they say we trust the ANC, we trust the ANC, but we don't want you to be wishy-washy on corruption. We want you to act on corruption. Mm. So it's definitely an issue. So going back to the load shedding issue, they still need, and especially because Gauteng is on a hanging on a knife's edge. Mm. It could go anyway.
Yeah.
From what I saw, polling numbers a few weeks ago, it was, they were saying ANC is going to get between 47 and 50. Mm. If they get below 50 in Gauteng, we have a situation like local government elections. So they can't afford to just be, load shedding. Our people in the rural areas, the Eastern Cape, where we have a lot of our majority of people, are not affected by that, so it's not an issue. Mm. The same with my parents live in Northern KZN.
Yeah.
They didn't have load shedding at all.
Yeah.
And Northern KZN is quite rural.
Yeah.
And KZN is a big province for the ANC again. Yeah. Whether it's just that they use less electricity off the grid, and so they don't feel like they have to cut the electricity, I'm not sure. But yeah, you can't, even though it doesn't affect maybe, say, majority in other provinces, they can't ignore the load shedding issue.
Actually, on that whole load shedding issue, because so much has been said about this particular load shedding, and I remember a couple of weeks ago on the same podcast, I remember Ron Derby actually saying that Eskom is South Africa's Brexit, you know. So do you think a lot of this, and I like the fact that you alluded to the fact that some of their polling numbers, constituents are worried about corruption, etc. Is Eskom still just a power issue, or has it become, for the electorate, or has it become this symbol of how the government can take the country forward? Like, if the government can't fix Eskom, then surely how can they take us as a country forward? If they can't fix corruption at this one entity, how are they going to fix corruption in the whole thing? Do you think that's where the electorate is sitting, that Eskom has become the symbol of what's going to happen, I guess, in the foreseeable future? Or is this still more or less a power issue?
I want to say still more or less a power issue, but I think it's because we've got very short memories. So we had load shedding now, what, 2-3 weeks ago?
Yeah.
But now we've had electricity for 3 weeks. I must tell you, I don't sit thinking, worrying every day, oh my gosh, will the power be on today? Is load shedding going to kick in? Maybe we should, because Eskom is really a big problem.
Yes, it is.
And like you said, it is indicative of what's happening in our state institutions. Mm. And fixing our state institutions. At the same time, that's not going to happen overnight. Mm. But, yeah, like I said, I'm not sure that it's a problem when it happens. But if the lights are on, everyone's happy.
So and sort of more reactionary than...
I think so. And I could be wrong, and then people could disagree with me. Mm. But... and I guarantee you that week of elections, they will make sure there is no load shedding. We will have electricity in May, at least in the beginning of May.
I want to come back to the issue of what we sort of began talking about, that theme around voter apathy. And we just have our last clip that's just around the ANC voter pullout. And then we're just going to take the election just to predict what might happen in future.
Do you think that everything that happened in the past few years is likely to make people more willing to want to vote, angrier so that they vote deliberately, or vote because they think it's the right thing to do, or vote against something?
What has happened over the last, give it the Jacob Zuma years, has actually made people stay away, because in South Africa, particularly the black people who were victims of apartheid and the older ones, rather than vote for anybody else and against the ANC, they'd stay at home. The past 9 years, they've done exactly that. Jacob Zuma was really successful in propping up the opposition by keeping people at home. Yes, he appealed to a certain kind of people. Now he's gone. Cyril Ramaphosa holds no charm whatsoever. He's just a dry old man who's looking for votes. But on the other hand, you've got Musi Maimane, who really sounds preachy but very hollow. There's no content in him. You can already feel there's someone behind him, like holding him by the scruff, like talk, and he does exactly that. So I don't see the real person that does have appeal to a certain kind of people is Julius Malema. He just tells them what they want to hear. So he is most likely to get his supporters out. Ramaphosa will do a better job than Zuma, but he will certainly not pull the ANC out.
My question, after this very animated description of what's going on in opposition politics, is because I've heard this line of thinking before, and I wanted to sort of maybe get your thoughts, especially after Sikonathi's comments, is there's a school of thought that this election will be about incumbents defending their positions, right? We've already talked about the ANC defending their position as the majority party in South Africa. But I wanted to hear your thoughts, because there's a school of thought that the EFF is not out to win the election. They're just out to become the official opposition. Do you think that there's credence in that particular school of thought, or do you honestly think they feel like they can win the election in May?
No, I don't think they feel they can win the election in May.
Yeah.
Julius is smart.
Yeah.
He's pragmatic. He knows this. Mm. So that's why, and Sikonathi said it, that's why you can go out and make promises that you're going to double the social grant, mm. that you're going to nationalize all land, because you know you're not going to have to implement it.
Mm.
We cannot afford, this country cannot afford to double the social grant. Mm. Unfortunately, I totally agree that the social grant is extremely low, but we can't do it.
Yeah.
But it's quite easy when you know you're not going to be, you're not going to have to implement these policies to make these promises.
Yeah.
The EFF has made it quite clear, though. They want to be in government.
Yeah.
So 2016, they came in. They said, we don't want positions. That's why when they negotiated on the coalition or the cooperation,
yeah.
they didn't negotiate for positions. They didn't say, we'll vote with the DA if the DA gives us MMC of finance mm-hmm. of the city of Joburg. They just said, you know, these are certain issues that we are interested in, and we'll vote for you. We'll vote with you
mm.
if you can ensure that these certain issues are on the table.
Mm.
They went to the ANC with their long list of demands, which the ANC said, no, we won't be doing that,
mm.
and said, fine. But now they want positions.
Mm.
Floyd Shivambu last year in an interview with the Business Day said the same thing. We want positions. So if we do come to a coalition Gauteng,
mm.
the EFF again will be the kingmaker. And I believe, from reading, this is my point of view from reading, is that they will probably come and say, okay, fine. Say they're talking to the ANC. We'll vote for you to keep Gauteng.
Mm.
You take the premier spot, but we want Speaker of the Provincial Legislature, and we want MEC of Finance and MEC of Education.
Yeah.
And so they get themselves into
positions. Yeah.
So that's more their game plan now. They know they're not going to govern nationally.
Yeah.
And I think the DA also quite honestly knows they're not going to
to win.
Govern nationally
yeah.
in this election, after this election.
So I guess part of the question then is, what do we do with the apathetic voters? because from what Sikonathi said in that clip, apathetic voters will help the opposition to defeat the ANC. But should opposition not be trying to win over those apathetic voters just so that they can boost their own constituencies? Because I think it actually speaks volumes when a group of people says, in a normal situation, I would vote for this party, but in this set of elections, I'd rather sit out.
Mm.
Because I still, in essence, support my party. I just don't vote for them. And I don't see any credence in voting for the opposition. You know, so how do they tackle that? How do they get those very staunch, because I'm guessing these are very staunch ANC supporters who, as you said earlier on, we're confident, but we're just not happy with you guys right now. Yeah.
Well, this is, I guess, where the Ramaphosa factor comes in this election. I must say, this election for me is more presidential than party.
Okay. Yeah.
So the message that Cyril Ramaphosa and the ANC campaign, that he is working on unity of the party, renewing the party, and bringing South Africans together.
Mm.
So if he's going to those diehard ANC members who will not go vote because they can't see themselves voting for the ANC as it is, and they can't see themselves voting for anyone else, the whole ticket of hope, give me a chance. We had the 9 wasted years, although the president himself doesn't use wasted years. But it's almost like on a ticket of hope. Like, it's that new dawn. Doesn't work for everyone, I know, but that is the ticket he's going on.
Mm.
It's almost saying, give me a chance. Look what I've done since coming into office in 2018. And let's give that to him.
Mm.
He did do a lot of the things he said he'd do in the State of the Nation. We've seen the removal of Tom Moyane. We've seen a new NDPP.
Mm.
So he's showing he's changing things. It's slow, and I want to add that a little bit cosmetic, because you've still got to change what's happening in institutions, not just the head.
So you think they've sort of gone for the low-hanging fruit?
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. But you have to show some success, I guess you have to.
Yeah.
But when it comes to voter apathy, they're going to have to go on the fact of, I'm not Jacob Zuma. The ANC under Jacob Zuma was like this. We're changing. This is what we're doing. And I think they're hoping that that's going to bring out their voters who were apathetic in the last election, but also attract new voters.
Yeah.
Those who, because I think everyone is tired of what, like, the last 9 years were tiring. It was depressing.
Mm.
And I think humans inherently want hope. And if they feel that there is hope, then I think they're more likely to come out. That could be a little fanciful of me to think, but from what I understand from watching the campaign and that's very much the ticket.
Yeah.
We're renewing, we're uniting, we're bringing people together, give us a chance. And there were, the IRR did their last polling in February. They asked questions regarding favorability of leaders.
Mm.
President Cyril Ramaphosa nationally had a 60.4% favorability rating. Julius Malema was a 32-point-something, and Musi Maimane 31.
Mm.
Ramaphosa is actually
far
ahead of the other two. If you look at it, look, that is, again, it's a snapshot.
Yeah.
It was in February. A lot has happened since February. But I that's why I say a presidential election, because I think people are maybe putting their hope and their confidence maybe more in the person.
Uh-huh.
In the party.
Yeah. So, as we come to the end of our podcast, I just had one little thing I wanted to get your thoughts on. And it's part of the presentation that they gave yesterday. And it was around the theory of the three gates. Mm. And I wanted to sort of get your thoughts on this, because it's basically just around for voters. It's one thing to say that you want people to vote, but there are all these things that need to be in place for a person to vote, such as a person must be 18 years old to vote, a person must be registered to vote, and a person must actually show up on the day to actually vote for whoever their chosen party or candidates are. So just so your thoughts are just around the presentation and how this actually factors into the overall picture.
So yeah, so it's on us as voters as well as citizens of this country to, if we're not happy with the way things are in our country, if we want to participate in what's happening in our country, we should be going through these steps. They're not difficult. I don't know if that answers your question. You know, I'm 18. Okay, great. I can now vote. So when registration opens, and registration, you can obviously now, ahead of elections, they close the voters roll. But after elections, you can go register. If you move, you can go register to your municipal office at any time. Register. And then on that day, actually just go to the voting station. I know for some people, and maybe those who are apathetic, they're like, oh, it's a public holiday. So nice to just be at home and not have
Let
to worry.
Chill. Yeah.
But I do think that we as citizens do have a responsibility to vote. I know not everyone feels this way, but I feel if you want to participate in your country, and no matter who you want to vote for, you can vote for the smallest party on this planet.
Yeah.
But if you want to participate and you care about your country, I feel you should vote.
So that brings us to the end of our podcast today. As you heard, we're in studio with Genevieve Quintal, who is the politics editor for the Business Day. She says that as citizens of South Africa, we should be doing our part, because we can sit and talk about the different leaders, we can talk about policy and stuff like that, but at the end of the day, it is our collective as an electorate that's actually going to move the country forward. And when you have issues where, and it illustrates very well in issues where if people don't show up, then you find a situation where the ANC loses an election more than the DA actually wins that election. So that was us for today. It is the Business Day Business Spotlight podcast. Remember that you can find us. We are available on all streaming platforms. You can find us on businesslive.co.za, and you can also find our latest podcast on Business Life under the podcast Business Day Spotlight. On Twitter, we're hashtag BD Spotlight, and you can also subscribe for free on Ayano FM, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your podcasts. Thank you so much to everyone who was listening. Thank you to our team, our producer, that's Paige Mueller. And for myself, Mudiomo Justice Gavaza, it's good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.